Hello, this is Gideon Malsin, and this is a responsive day for the 29th day of Tevet. Today we're going to see two relatively brief responses by Rav Uziel and the Tzitz Eliezer on questions about women and their relationship to mitzvot in which they're not commanded. So we'll see that in a second, but let's pause to make sure we thank Rabbi Jack Abramowitz, David Hachhauser, and the OU in general for putting these shiurim online, making them available to you. The first of the tshuvot that we'll see is Shut Mishpatei Uziel, Krach Dalet, the fourth volume of Mishpatei Uziel, in Yanim Klaliyim, Siman Dalet. Response number four, about Mitzvot HaSeh Shazman Grama, the broadest category that people speak about in terms of how women differ halachically from men, is that in general women are, as a general rule that has exceptions on both sides, but as a general rule, women are exempt is an important word in the context of this tshuva. It means it's not that they're not allowed to, but they're not required to, and with the extent and how that works is part of what's going to be central to this tshuva in mitzvot that have a time component, meaning the mitzvot that appear from time to time. They're not situational only. So let's say a ma'akeh, building a fence around one's roof, only comes up when one builds a roof or has an open area at an elevation that needs fencing. That would not be a mitzvah haseh shazman grama. It's not time related. And then there are mitzvot that apply all the time, right? Such as the mitzvah to try to emulate Hashem's ways. So that's not time bound. And therefore, in all those areas, women or men are equal and completely the same Jewishly. And in terms of their commandment of those mitzvot. But there is this category called mitzvah haseh shazman grama. So perfect example of mitzvah of shaking a lulav. That only comes up every year on Sukkot. That's a mitzvah to say, it's a positive commandment, it's an obligation. She has man grama, that is, has a time component to it. So on the 29th of Tevet, which is our date for today, now he writes it as chatzerat or chatzeret, chetzadi resh tav, he really means 5698, but that was a year which, if you spelled it in its right way, you can spell it out for yourselves, spells a word that's unpleasant and distasteful, and therefore many people, when they write the name of that year, they change around the letters. So it was the 29th of Tevet of 1938, and Rav Uziel wants to talk about the question of women making a bracha on mitzvot HaSeh Shazman Grama. It is generally assumed, and we're going to talk about it in the course of the tshuva, but as background, it's generally assumed that women are permitted to perform some mitzvot, so women can shake a lulav, and the question is to make a bracha when they do so. And just as background to this tshuva, the general assumption, and it's an important background, because let's remember that Rav Uziel was the Sephardic chief rabbi first of Tel Aviv, and then of all of Israel for many, many years. So he's a well-established Sephardi, and that's going to be relevant to our tshuva as well. The general practice was that Sephardi women did not make bracha. Ovadia Yosef is very adamant about that. Pasuk like the Shulchan Aruch, Sephardi women did not make bracha when they perform such mitzvot, and Ashkenazi women follow the ruling of Rabbeinu Tam, who said that they can make bracha, they should make bracha if they're going to perform the mitzvah. So Rav Uziel says, I want to talk about this issue, and he says, well, first question is, when we say that women are, whatever the right word is, p'turot, it's the word in the Gemara, from mitzvot HaSeh Shazman Grama, do we mean lo hitztavam meikara mitzvot elu? Do we mean that when the Torah was given, these mitzvot completely didn't apply to them, right? It's as if at the same time the Torah was given, there were two Torahs given at the same time. There was the Torah for men, and that included, let's say, mitzvot like hearing shofar be blown and shaking a lulav and sitting in a sukkah and all those kinds of mitzvot. And then there was this other Torah hidden within that Torah, as it were, subsumed within that Torah. There's a completely different Torah that applied to women, which didn't have it in it at all. Oh, Shatorah Patra. Or can we say that no? The Torah is given to men and women equally, and the Torah said, but these things women don't need to do. They're exempt from doing those things. And that's going to be a nafkamina, he's suggesting, in terms of bracha. Because if they were never included whatsoever, you can imagine saying, there's no way for them to make the bracha. And that would be, let's say, the ruling of the Rambam, followed by the Shulchan Aruch, that women should not make a bracha. It's because they're not obligated, so therefore they can't say, Asher Kitshanu Tzavet Tzivanu, in this mitzvah. But if they were obligated and exempted, then it's relevant to them and they could say those words. Now, let me just pause. I almost never do this, but something occurred to me that I noted years ago. I noticed that in the Rambam, in his Book of Commandments, Sefer HaMitzvot, at the end of the Mitzvot Aseh section, at the end of the section where he lists all the positive obligations that he knows of, he gives you listings of how many there are and how much they apply to and they don't apply to. And he says that when it comes to women, there are 46 mitzvot aseh that women are exempt from, that they don't have to do. And now the verses are bothering me. I'm missing one. And he says, and he gives a pasuk for it, that would say that they've azlat yad, ki azlat, lo tereki azlat yad, not 46 left, 46. Sorry, it's not 46. It's 46 total. It's that when he says, when you look at them, I just looked it up. When you look at all the mitzvot, there are 60 of them of the obligations are going to be required of men throughout in their lives in all of these in all areas. That if they live ordinary lives, there'll be 60 mitzvot that apply to them, and then of those 60, 46 apply to women. And then he says, the 46, the way that he gives psukim to remember this. So he says, for the men, it's the pasuk in Shir HaShirim, Shishim Heima Milachot. There are 60 queens. So like these are the 60 queens of Jewish observance. And then he says, the 14 that are missing for women would be Azlat Yad. It's pasuk in Hazinim, Gamtireki Azlat Yad. So Yad is 14. That implies there are 14 missing from the men's. And then he writes, or you could give an imani for the fact they have 46. Forget the 60 and they have 14 less. They have 46. That would be a pasuk in Zechariah, gam at dam bidam beriteich. And you also bidam in numerology, in gematria, is 46. So that also, it seems to me like the Rambam, I suggested, maybe I'm wrong, but it seems like the Rambam has this idea as well, that when you look at women, the question of whether they were included in the original, in all of the original mitzvot, and then exempted from them, or they were never included at all, that could be relevant to this Rambam as well. So in any case, coming back to Rav Uziel, his first suggestion is, there's a Gemara that says, the ein me'akvin al-tinokot litkoa, you don't stop children from blowing shofar, I think on Shabbos, and that sounds like you stop women. Right? He says you don't stop tinokot, you stop women. So the Gemara goes through it. Rabbi says it's a machloket actually, and it's a debate, and there's two sides based on another discussion of whether or not women can lay their hands on a korban that they bring. So when Jewish men bring a korban that they're obligated in, they put their hands on it. It's called smicha. They put their hands and their whole weight on it. It's sort of a symbolic investing of the korban, of the animal, with their personality, at least according to the Ramban's reading of korbanot, as being a situation where we sort of look at ourselves and see ourselves as if we should have been there. Then we're sort of symbolically making the animal ourselves. So Rabbi Yehuda held that Bnei Yisrael can't do smicha. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon held, no, nashim somchot reshut. They're not obligated in this korban. I think it's on a chagi. I don't remember right now, it's so vital to our point, but it's a korban in which women are not obligated. Men do smicha. Rabbi Yehuda held women don't do smicha. Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon held they may. So Rabbi Uziel says, it seems like Rabbi Yehuda says that women may not, says that since they're not part of the mitzvah, they're not obligated, they're not relevant to it. Not only are they not obligated, they're not relevant to it. And therefore, if they fulfill it, right, then they can't make it look like it's an obligation. And if they make it look like an obligation, the Rav Uziel reads it, that would be a question of Baal Tosif. Like they're adding to the Torah, they're saying, oh, I'm also obligated, and that's a problem of Baal Tosif. That's it's not only a women's issue, and women will take it badly if I point it out here, but I think it's relevant to point out in general. When we add to the Torah, it's a very complicated question, right? So we have all these minhagim that add to the Torah. How those come about, and when they're allowed, when they're not allowed, seems to me to be an important question that people don't even bother to think about, and it leads people to forget that the Torah says, Baal Tosif, the Torah says, don't add to the Torah. The Torah makes it sound like the Torah is very confident that there's enough in the Torah, first of all. So you say, well, there are all these derabbanans. It's an important point. The derabbanans there are there to protect the Torah in some way. So it all gets very complicated. We're not going to talk about Baal Tosif today. But Rav Uziel's understanding of Yehuda to say that when women perform a mitzvah that is not obligatory upon them, and they perform it as if it's obligatory, that creates a problem of Baal Tosif. For Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Yossi hold that the women weren't ever excluded from the mitzvah. They're only excluded from the obligation of the mitzvah. It would be as if the Torah said, here's an important activity. It's important to some extent. It's necessary for such people. And if other people do it, it'd also be good. But it's not necessary for them. Right? So people sometimes take offense and they say, well, why are you excluding me from it? But that's not the way to read it necessarily. It could be that the Torah is saying, it's obligatory for people to do X, Y, and Z. It would be meritorious for other people to do as well. Everybody can do it if they want to. If they don't want to, that's also fine, right? You got to say it anyway. That's the way Rav Uziel is reading this debate. Then he comes and he says, and by the way, If you look in the Gemara in Kiddushin, where the Gemara derives the exemption for women from Mitzvot Aseh Tzemach Grama, it comes from tefillin. We're not going to get into the sources now, but that's a fact, that tefillin is the paradigm for the fact that women aren't obligated in Mitzvah of tefillin, and they're also not obligated in, therefore, and that tefillin themselves, and they're Mitzvot Aseh Tzemach Grama, they're taken to be a characteristic of a whole class, not just of themselves. And then the derivation of tefillin is because tefillin are in the two parshiot of Kriyat Shema, are juxtaposed, are written right next to the obligation to study Torah. So the Gemara assumes and understands that there is some linkage and connection between Talmud Torah, the study of Torah, and the wearing of tefillin. And then since women are obligated in the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, in the mitzvah of studying Torah, therefore they're not obligated in tefillin, and from tefillin you get to mitzvah seishas ban grama. Now how do you know they're not obligated in the mitzvah of Talmud Torah? That's actually an interesting derivation of its own that I've spoken about it on occasion, but Rav Uziel just points out the upshot of it, which is, the upshot is, the Pasuk says, you teach it to your sons. Now, sometimes I have to say, sometimes sons means children, sometimes it means sons. The Gemara understands it to be in that Pasuk to refer to sons and not daughters. So that's the relevant thing, and therefore that's how you know that was. So which way does that cut? Rav Uziel doesn't quite say, but he says, so il v'halacha kaimalan k'Rabbi Yossi, our halacha seems to follow Rabbi Yossi, and we follow Rabbi Yossi because he gives a reason for it in the Gemara about putting your hands on the korban, that's not important to us. That would seem to say, Rav Uziel, that women are allowed to fulfill mitzvot seishas ban grama, as opposed to Rabbi Yehuda, if they weren't allowed to, they really shouldn't be doing it. And not only then, once they're allowed to, then it would seem like they would make a bracha on it. That's the way Uziel understands it. Then he says, but the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch Paskin like Rabbi Yossi, and yet they seem to disagree with me. Right? They accepted Rabbi Yossi's psak that women may perform mitzvot in which they're not obligated, and nonetheless they also said you can't make the bracha. So Rav Uziel is sort of noticing that they seem to be reading the whole topic differently than, meaning one could argue that he's cast it not correctly necessarily, meaning he cast it as, well, either you're not included at all, which you shouldn't make a bracha, and we shouldn't do it, or you were included in the obligation, just exempted, you were included in the Torah of it, just exempted from the obligation, and then you're allowed to do it, and then once you're allowed to do it, it's fine to make a bracha on it. But apparently, the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch seem not necessarily see it that way. They seem to think there's a category of people who, since they're not obligated to do it, yes, they may do it, right? But that doesn't mean that they can make a bracha on it. So he says, I don't understand it, because it seems to me they're completely connected to each other. So you have to say, he says, Shebe'emet, that according to them, Gam suma'inu mevarech elamishum dechayav midirabanan. He says that even a blind person, there's a whole discussion about the extent to which blind people are obligated in the Torah. He says, you have to say, well, then we make bracha on mitzvot, that would only be on because they're obligated to Rabbanan. That's a whole topic of its own. That's not our topic, so I'm going to leave it. That's what he says to understand the Rambam. And then he writes, Alval be'emet da'at v'minu tam nireh yoter. But I think Rabbi Tam got it right. Now, to me, that's a fascinating thing. Watching Rabbi Uziel, a firm Sephardi, okay, you know what? I think Rabbi Tam is more correct, even though this is a long-standing practice of Sephardi women and Sephardi poskim. And remember that Rabbi Yosef, who's a much younger, not quite a contemporary, he's 40 years younger than Rabbi Uziel, but he's one of the next big Sephardi gdolim, was adamant that no, we Sephardim follow Shulchan Aruch. Now, it happens to be that the responsive that we studied together on the 16th of Kislev, I remember the date well, usually I don't remember things like this at all, happens to be the yard site of my wife's father. So I taught it several times, it's a fascinating tshuva, it's about kitniot. Rav Uziel's writing about kitniot, whether you can remat your kitniot for that year, it's like the 1915, 1916, World War I was raging, and there were problems with getting food and getting matzah and all these things. It's an interesting tshuva of its own, but he talks about the whole topic of kitniot without once noticing that kitniot is a custom that Sephardim haven't accepted. It seems like, in his understanding, his worldview, Sephardim had accepted the custom of kitniot. So it's another example where Uziel doesn't seem to me to be as typical a Sephardi as you might have expected. So fundamentally, though, he says, this is the psak as it is. Women, Rambam, Shulchan Aruch say women shouldn't make brachot. Rabbi Natan says women can make brachot. And I think Rabbi Natan is probably more right, although he doesn't quite say, and therefore Sephardi women should change their practice. He just says, when I'm learning the sugya, when I'm learning the topic, that's the way it seems to me. Now, then he goes into, why should women be exempted from these mitzvot? Now, that's a hard question, which I actually wrote something about years ago. I wrote an article that then disappeared from online. I wrote it in the early days of the internet, and then it disappeared from online. It's in my book. I think a section of it is in my book. We're missing the point. What's wrong with the Orthodox Jewish community and how to fix it? So he points out that Tosfos Rid, who's living in the 1200s, I'm pretty sure, wrote, maybe the 1100s, but I think the 1200s, wrote that it's because women, and this is, there are other answers that say this as well, Rashi says it somewhere, that's not the only answer he gives on it, but that women are birshut ba'alehen. They are under the thumb, as it were. They are obligated to follow the direction of. It's hard to say it in a way that would be modernly acceptable. It means that women, that husbands sort of run the household and run life, and therefore husbands will tell women to do things, and that means that Hashem doesn't want to get in the way of that and would therefore exempt them from these things. That's the way the Rid wrote it. The Avud Raham writes a similar thing, but he writes it even more extremely. He writes, Shemishua badut libali, and they are subservient to their husbands. So that's obviously not politically correct today, but Raziel is going to point out it doesn't even necessarily fit, explain the situation. There are 80, he says, Achronim sheretzu l'mod mizeh l'chayev nashim mitzvot aseh shazman grama shebeshev ve'al ta'aseh. He says, so Achronim read that and they said, well, that makes sense for those obligations. Mitzvot aseh, I think we often translate mitzvot aseh as a positive obligation. So positive is, an unfortunate word because it sounds like the prohibitions are negative. They're bad, right? These are, when you count just positive and negative, I think what we mean is an obligation, something you're required to do as opposed to a prohibition, something that you're not allowed to do. Right? That's sort of a better, I think, to me, a more felicitous way to speak about obligations and prohibitions, mitzvot aseh and sort of lo ta'aseh. But there's a category of mitzvot aseh which the Torah expressed as an obligation. In positive isn't the right word, but in do this terms, right, as opposed to don't do this terms, but actually didn't require any action. So I'll give you an example of that. An example of that would be Shvitat Yom Tov. What's Shvitat Yom Tov? It's an obligation, right? The Torah tells us we must desist from activity, certain kinds of activity on holidays. So it's a positive obligation. It's an obligation, right? You must do this. But what the doing doesn't require anything. So the fact that a woman is mishubedet to her husband, even if that was that's the reason we were going to take, the fact that she has obligations to her husband shouldn't in any way stop her from fulfilling that obligation, because that obligation doesn't involve doing anything. It just involves from refraining from doing things. And if her husband tells her, go ahead and do this against the Torah, we never listen to anybody, basically, who tells her, right? We listen to some people who tell us to violate the Torah. Sorry, I don't want to get into that complication, but let's say a parent tells a child, violate the Torah, child's not allowed to. So it's not like the husband has any right to tell her to violate the Torah, so you can easily imagine saying she's obligated in that. So if Raziel doesn't like that, he says, because the truth is that once, if you have somebody working for somebody else, then even things that aren't obligatory upon them, they have to sort of guard their time for that other person, so therefore you could say you wouldn't let any other commands get in the way. Whole topic of its own. But he doesn't like the reason at all anyway, because he says, I don't know what you're talking about, because when somebody's hired to work for somebody else, they're subservient to them, they're subject to them, they're required to follow their rulings and their orders, and yet we don't say they're not obligated. In Sozishas Ban Grama, we have a mission that says, Ha'omdim Korin V'Rosh Ha'ilan V'Rosh Ha'nidbach. Right, we have that when you have people who are working for somebody else and they're working up in the treetops, so they go up to the top of the treetops and don't come down till they're finished their work for the day, so they say Kriyat Shema up there when the time comes. No thought that there'd be pterim, that there would be exempt. Now, I have to say that's not necessarily the best example, because there you could say, well, the Torah obligated the men, and therefore they can't take on a job which gets in the way of that obligation, and therefore, that whenever they take a job, there's the assumption that they will also have to fulfill their mitzvot. Whereas when Hashem created the Torah, when he gave the Torah, he decided that it would be good for marriage if the women were so meshua badot, their husbands would be so available to do what their husbands wanted, did they get it? So I don't know if that's an exact proof, but that's why he's uncomfortable with that reason. I think it's also uncomfortable because in our times, we don't like to think in those terms, in terms of the relationship between men and women. Some people still do like to think in those terms of the relationship between men and women, but I think it's very common for people not to. So Rav Uziel offers another option in his understanding. He says that their nature and the nature of their role in life. Now, when you speak about tafkidan b'chayim, their role in life, so that's going to assume things that, again, today people don't just like to say, well, the women should do this and the men should do that. But that's the way he's understanding it. So he says that they're already mishu'abadot lazman. They already have time issues in their mind very much. Meshek Abaye, in terms of taking care of the house and raising the children, v'lo hazman nitan lirshutoa. They don't have their time available to choose when to do things. He means something like, which I think Rabbi Saul Berman made famous years later in early 1970s, in tradition, this idea, but Uziel clearly got there first, this idea that women's time isn't their own in the same way, or they're more alert to time. I think Rabbi Lamb suggested the idea that women's observance of the Nida practices would also make them alert to time, and that's the kind of thing that, and he's saying, and maybe that's what the written Avraham, I think I could find a way to say that when the Tosfos written, I think that's what it is. According to those reasonings, then it could be that she's exempt because since she's involved in other mitzvot, the mitzvot of raising a family and building a married life and all those things, and therefore the Torah said that she didn't have to do it. But it would make clear that it's more like an osek mitzvah, patur mina mitzvah, that since she's involved in some important activities, she's not obligated in other important activities, and therefore that would again support Rabbeinu Tam's idea that she could make a bracha on it. And then he says, by the way, an exception to all of this is lulav and shofar. Since lulav and shofar, he says, since they hint at the gathering of all the Jewish people to serve Hashem, to their hearts, to serve Hashem together, then women are completely relevant to it, and therefore they can certainly make a bracha on it. And the Chida already wrote that as well, and that's the custom in all Tzvi, so meaning that even Sephardi women will make a bracha on shofar and on lulav, because it brings them all together. So that's the tshuva. I've gone on for a while, I won't go on more, but I will say that I suggested a slightly different reason in my book, We're Missing the Point. If you find a slightly different reason about why this exemption, I had an idea of my own. But I want to get to Eliezer and Chelek Tetvav in part 15, Simon Kavdal, responsum number 24. He is responding to, this is a tshuva that's dated the 29th of Tevet of Tavshin Membet of 1982. And the question that was raised, and it was raised by, he says, Ben Achot Imi, which is my first cousin, right? My mother's sister's son. Hagon Tzvi Pesach Frank Shlita. The great Torah scholar Tzvi Pesach Frank. Now, when I hear the name Tzvi Pesach Frank, I think often, I would think immediately of the well-known rabbi of Yerushalayim for decades, Tzvi Pesach Frank. But this man is a shlita, and this is 1982, so I'm pretty sure it's the grandson. Now, it's his mother's sister's son, so I think what happened is, I think that the Tzitzelezer himself married a granddaughter, Tzvi Pesach Frank, and I think that his cousin, his first cousin on his mother's side, was also a grandson of Rebbe Zvi. I think that's what's going on. So this was Tzvi Pesach Frank, the younger one, who I don't know of other than from this tshuva, had written a question to discuss to Eliezer, his cousin, why the Shulchan Aruch accepts the idea that women should make a bracha when they learn Torah. What's the problem? We just saw a tshuva of Rav Ziel that pointed out that the Shulchan Aruch holds that women don't make brachot, they don't make a bracha when they're about to perform a mitzvah, tasei shazban grama, in which they're not obligated. And we said in that tshuva that the source of their being exempt from mitzvah tasei shazban grama was their exemption in study of Torah. So if they don't make a bracha on mitzvah tasei shazban grama, why should you make the bracha on the study of Torah? So it happens to be, here's an interesting thing, the Beis Yosef in the tour explained the answer. So you could say to yourself, well, Rabbi Yosef Kar himself told us his answer, so the conversation will stop. But this was a foreign kind of problem with it. So Beis Yosef in Shulchan Aruch in the tour said that he's following the smag in passing this way, because women are obligated to learn Torah. They're obligated to learn those dinim, those laws that apply to them, right? It can't be true, in other words, that when the Gemara says women are exempt from the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, from the obligation to study Torah, that it means they don't have to study Torah at all. Can't it mean that? Because however they get the knowledge, they have to find out how to keep the Torah. And however they're going to do it, that act of finding out how to keep the Torah is an act of studying Torah. So they're obviously obligated to study Torah. That's what the Smag says. And the Beis Yosef tells us, and that's why he passed in that way. But this Tzvi Pesach Frank had a problem because there are other Gemaras that make it seem like women are not at all relevant to the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. So for this sounds like women have an obligation to study Torah. So the problem is, there's another Gemara, and this is a Gemara that became famous because it's the source of the idea that maybe women, that some people hold that women actually shouldn't learn Torah. Gemara in Sota talks about that if a woman is suspected of having had an affair and she has to go through the Sota procedure, so if she had had the affair, then the Sota procedure is supposed to cause her stomach and her thigh to blow up and eventually to kill her. But the Gemara says, if she has certain merits, they will stop that from happening. So what kinds of merits are we talking about? The Gemara says, if you mean merits of studying Torah, she's not obligated to study Torah, and the level of reward for a mitzvah in which you're not obligated would seem not to be enough. But if you've just told me that women have to study Torah to know the dinim, the halachos that apply to them, then why shouldn't that be? So the Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, cited a chida who also had that question, who brought another question. Gemara in Shabbos says that Rabbi Shimon said that askara, which I think we think is diphtheria, comes to the world. Yeah, I think it's diphtheria. So it comes to the world, says Rabbi Shimon, because of the violation of the sin of bitul Torah, of people not learning when they could and when they should and they were required to. And he says, women prove that. I think he means that in their times, women got diphtheria significantly less than men did. So that he's saying it must be because they don't have any, there's no way they can violate bitul Torah because they're not obligated to learn, so they're never violating it. So this chida had said, I understand, if they're obligated to learn enough that the Shulchan Aruch says they have to make a bracha, because the Shemach says they have to learn their laws, then shouldn't there be an obligation? There shouldn't be a problem of bitul Torah that they haven't spent the time learning those halachos that apply to them. Now, I once, many years ago, heard Rav Yosef Zech Zevacha only very few times, to my chagrin, but I heard him once start giving a set of shiurim on Hilchot Shabbat, on the laws of Shabbat, and he was talking about how complicated the laws of Shabbat are and how much time it takes to learn them, and that he pointed out that you talk about how women aren't obligated to learn necessarily, or they don't have to learn a lot. He says even if women had tried to just master the laws of Shabbat, like the laws of Shabbat need to be mastered, that could fill a whole, you know, a whole learning session for one's life. So that this would be an example of saying that. Now, I think, I don't want to put myself into this, but I think that in all these questions, you have to think about the nature of the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, as Rosh Tipesach Frank and Rosh Tiliezer will get to. But that's what's underlying all of it. It seems to be like different versions of this mitzvah going around. So the Chida wrote that he thinks that their obligation to learn their laws isn't mitzad mitzvah Talmud Torah. It's not a function of the obligation to learn Torah, but their chayavot to know the laws that apply to them. And then if they know the laws that apply to them, then they don't have to learn anymore. And if they don't have to learn anymore, there's no issue of bitul Torah, of neglecting to learn Torah. So this is Rosh Tzvi Frank had said, but that should then mean that when women make a birchas Torah on studying Torah, like the Shulchan Aruch says they should, it's like a birchas ha-mitzvah. It's like a bracha mitzvah, like before you shake a lulav, before you eat matzah Seder night. And then the question is, why would they make two or three birchos ha-Torah, right? We men, and women too, but men in the morning make two or three, depending on you split up, whether you split up one of the brachot into two or three brachot on birchot ha-Torah. So if you say women have a similar mitzvah to men, then you understand it. But their mitzvah is only on the mitzvah, on the specific mitzvah of learning Torah for the purpose of knowing what to do. That would seem to be only one of those brachot, not both or all three of them. And then another question, this is an issue that comes up in other tshuvot as well, that we tend not to make brachot unless the act that we're doing is the completion of the mitzvah. If it's not the completion of the mitzvah in some way, then we don't make a bracha on that action. And if for men, since the action is the learning itself, then you can make a bracha on it. But if you're going to tell me that for women, the action is the knowing what to do, then that's not a complete act, because it's not until they actually do something that then the mitzvah will have come to fruition. And then another issue, that Tzitzel was raising, he says, but if that's also the reason, then it would also seem to mean that if a woman already knows what she needs to do, then when she learns Torah, she shouldn't make a bracha, and nobody says such a thing. So Tzitzel says, first of all, he thinks that the two brachot of Birchot Torah are relevant to women, even in this line of reasoning, because the first bracha is a bracha on the mitzvah itself, and the second bracha is that Hashem gave us the Torah at all. It's not a bracha on the mitzvah, not a bracha on some other aspect of the mitzvah. So there'd be one way to read the two brachot is, bracha one is on learning it for the knowledge of it, bracha two is on the act of studying Torah. So this is saying, no, I think bracha two is on the fact that Hashem took us to Har Sinai, gave us the experience of Har Sinai, and gave us the Torah. It's an act of praise. It's hoda'ah v'shevach. And women can also praise that, because they were also in Matan Torah, and therefore the bracha is also relevant to them. By the way, not that he's going to say it this way, but you could then say maybe both brachot are like that, and there's two different versions of it, and then you could solve the problem for the Beis Yosef and just say Birchot Torah are completely separate, as I think other achronim do. But we're going to go on in this. Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank then asks, their answer is that when we say we don't make a bracha unless it's on a completion of something, we don't mean that the whole act has to be completed right then. We mean that we don't make a bracha on an act that's not in any way the mitzvah itself. So for example, making tefillin. So when you're making tefillin, there's no mitzvah making tefillin, it's just that it's going to pave the way to eventually doing tefillin. But in the learning of the Torah, even though it's really about knowing what to do, but the act of learning Torah is also a mitzvah of its own. So they're not maybe obligated in that mitzvah, but it's a mitzvah of its own, so they're performing a mitzvah. a general mitzvah, even though fundamentally it's for some other purpose, he thinks that's enough to make a bracha on it as well. Then he points out that the Chida, in some of his other writings, gives an answer very similar to what we saw in Rav Uziel before, that the reason why women don't make mitzvot on mitzvot aseh shazman grama, on obligations and of a time component, as Rav Uziel said, is because in those, they're completely irrelevant to those, that when the Torah was given, these mitzvot were not considered relevant to them whatsoever, so therefore they, maybe they could do it, and we're not going to stop them from doing it, but they can't make in any sense a bracha. The Chida writes that as well, but he says when it comes to Talmud Torah, that's impossible, and they are obviously relevant to the study of Torah, and that's what the Smag was pointing out. The Smag wasn't saying they're obligated in the sense, and that's what does it. It said that even when they're not obligated, they're nonetheless fully relevant to the mitzvah. Now, once you're going to say that, it's odd to understand how you can know that the Torah completely removed them from mitzvot aseh shazman grama, because after all, if the paradigm is Talmud Torah, and that teaches about tefillin, and that teaches about all the others, and in Torah you're going to tell me that they're relevant to it, then I would have thought the other thing as well, but that's the way the Chida wrote it, and that would explain, that would be one way to explain what the Beis Yosef with the psak of the Shulchan Aruch, that women are relevant to this mitzvah. Since they're relevant to it, they make a bracha on it. So Rav Tzvi Yitzchak Frank himself suggested another answer. He said that there's a, if you look at the Griz, Rav Velvel Soloveitchik, who was the son of Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, the uncle of Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik of YU, of who many people in YU circles call the Rav. So he brought an idea that his father, the Grach, meaning the Rav Chaim, who taught in Voloshin, who started the Brisker Derech, as we call it today, he had said that he thought the mitzvah of Birchos HaTorah was none of the parts of it were Birchos HaMitzvah. They weren't mitzvahs, they weren't brachos on the mitzvah. They were brachos on Cheftza Shel Torah. It would be like, there would be one bracha, would be like a Shevach V'Hodah, like we said, thanking Hashem for giving us Torah. The other would be more like a bracha on an apple, let's say. It's a bracha on the Cheftza Shel Torah. If it's going to be on a bracha on the Cheftza Shel Torah, on the object of Torah itself, on the fact that we have this object, so then too, there too, women would be obligated. And this would be specific work, since that would answer the Beis Yosef. Then you could say, because the brachos are different. It's not that the obligations are different, it's the brachos are different. And you'd have to fit that into the words, if you want to say, fit in the words of the Beis Yosef, when he says, the Smag says, that's a little genius. I think what you could say is, what he means is, that once you know they have to study it for the laws that apply to them, then you know that the Cheftza Shel Torah is something relevant to them, and they too can celebrate the Cheftza Shel Torah. I mean, it would be meaningless for a non-Jew to celebrate the Cheftza Shel Torah, because it's irrelevant to him, although it's somewhat relevant, but it's fairly relevant, because there's no real obligation on a non-Jew to study Torah anyway, and they may be prohibited to study Torah anyway. Complicated, but that's what I think he's trying to say. This is the answer in responding to this idea of the Grachs, and it's got the suggested. He said, first of all, in the generation before the Chida, there was a man named the Kise Eliyahu, and he had, and his whole idea isn't relevant to us, and we're running out of time anyway, but he made a point that maybe you could say that since women aren't obligated to learn all of Torah, they would be different in some ways, but not another way. So they could make a bracha, maybe, but other things wouldn't apply to them, because they're not. There might be a difference that between needing to know X parts of Torah and needing to know all of Torah. That might be different from each other, which I think is an interesting idea that could be pursued another time. And then finally, he notes that this Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank had written to him when he was talking about this Vilna, about the, I'm sorry, Reb Chaim's idea that there's a bracha on the Cheftza Shel Torah. What he had written was, Birkas HaTorah is a bracha on Klal Kiddushat Yahadutenu, on the fact that we're in general Jewish. V'al zeh shenu b'kesher achad im HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'Torah HaKadosh, and the fact that we are connected to Hashem and to the Torah itself. So, the Tzitzel Yosef says, you know, it's a nice idea. He says, it doesn't fit in the Reb Chaim. Reb Chaim just says, it's a bracha on the Cheftza Shel Torah. The Cheftza Torah, I think, means something more like what I explained to them, that we have something wonderful here, and then when you have something wonderful, you and you're able to partake of it, you often make a bracha, more like a Birchas HaPeiros, Birchas HaNehanin, than it's like a Birchas HaMitzvah, and that's what he's talking about. So that is two responses on the topic of women and their relationship to mitzvot, which they're not obligated to. Rav Uziel on the question making mitzvah of women making brachot on mitzvot aseh shazman grama, on obligations that have a time component. And the Tzitzel Yezer in conversation with his cousin, Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, the younger, about why it is that women are obligated, according to all opinions, to recite Birchot HaTorah before they study Torah. That's a responsible day for the 29th day of Tevet. Thank you for joining me. Thank you to Rabbi Jacob Rabowitz, David Hachhauser, to the OU, and I bid you a good day.